initiative derived encouragement a few years ago in Paris from the manner in which four persons sat together in silence one fine day about noon in the garden, as it is called, of the Palais de l'Industrie, the central court of the great glazed bazaar, where, among plants and parterres, gravelled walks and thin fountains, arranged the figures and groups, the monuments and busts, which form in the annual exhibition of the Salon the Department of Statuary. The spirit of observation is naturally high at the Salon, quickened by a thousand artful or artless appeals, but it need have put forth no great intensity to take in the characters I mention. As a solicitation of the eye on definite grounds, these visitors, too, constituted a successful plastic fact, and even the most superficial observer would have marked them as products of an insular neighbourhood, representatives of that tweed and waterproof class with which, on the recurrent occasions when the English turn out for a holiday, Christmas and Easter, Whitsuntide and the autumn, Paris besprinkles itself at a night's notice. They had about them the indefinable professional look of the British traveller abroad, the air of preparation for exposure, material and moral, which is so oddly combined with a serene revelation of security and of persistence, and which excites, according to individual susceptibility, the ire or the admiration of foreign communities. They were the more unmistakable, as they presented mainly the happier aspects of the energetic race to which they had the honour to belong. The fresh diffused light of the Salon made them clear and important. They were finished creations in their way, and ranged there motionless on their green bench, were almost as much on exhibition as if they'd been hung on the line. Three ladies and a young man. They were obviously a family, a mother, two daughters and a son, a circumstance which had the effect at once of making each member of the group doubly typical, and of helping to account for their fine taciturnity. They were not with each other on terms of ceremony, and also were probably fatigued with their course among the pictures, the rooms on the upper floor. Their attitude on the part of visitors who had superior features, even if they might appear to some passers-by to have neglected a fine opportunity for completing these features with an expression, was, after all, a kind of tribute to the state of exhaustion, of bewilderment, to which the genius of France is still capable of reducing the proud. En v'là des abrutis, more than one of their fellow-gazers might have been heard to exclaim. And certain it is that there was something depressed and discouraged in this interesting group, who sat looking vaguely before them, not noticing the life of the place, somewhat as if each had a private anxiety. It might have been finely guessed, however, that though on many questions they were closely united, this present anxiety was not the same for each. If they looked grave, moreover, this was doubtless partly the result of their all being dressed in such mourning as told of a recent bereavement. The eldest of the three ladies had indeed a face of a fine austere mould, which would have been moved to gaiety only by some force more insidious than any she was likely to recognise in Paris. Cold, still, and considerably worn, it was neither stupid nor hard. It was firm, narrow, and sharp. This competent matron, acquainted evidently with grief but not weakened by it, had a high forehead to which the quality of the skin gave a singular polish. It glittered even when seen at a distance, a nose which achieved a high free curve, and a tendency to throw back her head and carry it well above her, as if to disengage it from the possible entanglements of the rest of her person. If you had seen her walk, you would have felt her to tread the earth after a fashion, suggesting that in a world where she had long since discovered that one couldn't have one's own way, one could never tell what annoying aggression might take place, so that it was well, from hour to hour, to save what one could. Lady Agnes saved her head, her white triangular forehead, over which her close crinkled flaxen hair, reproduced in different shades in her children, made a looped silken canopy like the marquee at a garden party. Her daughters were as tall as herself, that was visible even as they sat there, and one of them, the younger evidently, altogether pretty, a straight, slender, grey-eyed English girl, of the sort who show good figures and fresh complexions. The sister, who was not pretty, was also straight and slender and grey-eyed, but the grey in this case was not so pure, nor were the straightness and the slenderness so maidenly. The brother of these young ladies had taken off his hat as if he felt the air of the summer day heavy in the great pavilion. He was a lean, strong, clear-faced youth, with a formed nose and thick, light brown hair, which lay continuously and profusely back from his forehead, so that to smooth it from the brow to the neck, but a single movement of the hand.